doing things that are not necessary according to what we have drafted as a legislation, we can call the minister to come and explain himself before the committee. I think it would be difficult to anticipate what will happen in VV, what will happen in the former Bophuthatswana area, KZN, Eastern Cape. It would be very difficult to anticipate exactly what will happen. That's why the broad phrasing is assisting us for the minister. I think the point that Melam is raising is that should not be so blank in such a way that it's easy for minister to do whatever he thinks necessary. There should be guidance in terms of the 16.2. Okay. Honorable Mthethwa and the Honorable Melam.
Actually, Chair, I'll be more comfortable if also they put 16.1. It should be say 16.1, 16.2. Other than 16.2 only in terms of the session. So that is set correctly in 16.1 and good. It flows down to 16.2.
Chair, are we going to amend the wording the necessary steps? Because if not, I'm going to object to this as being vague legislation. And I honestly think that the legal advisors should know better than to have something so vague in a piece of legislation.
What do you propose?
Chair, I would propose that the minister be given specific steps that he or she may take. In other words, the minister may intervene by doing this. He may intervene by doing that. He may intervene by... So you give him options, but you don't say... do whatever you like. Because his argument, the argument here is that, oh, well, every case is different. But it's not that different. I mean, essentially what will happen is the department will appoint an administrator who will go and run an establishment process in that tribal council. And that's, I guess, what the necessary step is. But to say the necessary steps means the minister can dissolve it. He can, I don't know, allow it to establish itself without going through the formula or anything like that. He can do what he likes. And that's my problem. It's that it's completely vague, which is not enforceable. So you've got to give the minister, here are the steps that he may or must take. And honestly, I think it should be the minister must. Because within a time frame, something hasn't happened, the minister must then be obliged to intervene. Similarly to the process in section 139, subsection 5 of the Constitution, where the minister must take steps if a provincial executive doesn't intervene in a municipality.
DG and Honorable Mthethwa.
While I take the point to be as specific as possible, some matters, if you become specific, you will exclude other matters. For example, there may be issues that require investigation. That the minister, his intervention can be an investigation. And his intervention could be putting an administrator. You know, it depends on the circumstances. His intervention may require a number of those sorts of things. While it is useful to be specific, you know, sometimes you can also exclude other things, and then when you apply them, they say no, but you are confined to five things only that you can only do. So I'm just trying to think that, you know, maybe to strike a balance, getting more specific, you exclude other things. Being too general also can be a problem. So there's got to be a middle road to ensure that it's as tight as possible.
Chair, we have been using these words, the reasonable and the concern and may regard due to, these are the terms that we have been using in this act throughout. You remember when we were dealing with the appointment of the deputy, we also said on the necessary. Necessary words has been used there. In the appointment of the deputy. I don't know, Chair, if now we've got a problem with such wording, whether we needed to go back to the whole document, start to change all what we have been using at the back.
That's why I feel strong, Chair, that we have already got the legal opinion on the matter. That's why the intention, why they use the reasonable or the necessary. So I felt that maybe let's keep it for a while, Chair, and then note the DA's rejection on the point. We can debate later.
Let us get back to it. Let's move forward. Let us look at it. May find better way. Let us work, and we'll come back to it. Let us move. Can we move back?
Let's go back to section 13.
17.
You see there when we're talking about the recognition of the children and traditional letters.
Okay, let's go back to the clause 70, sub 1. There's B on page 146. All disputes and claims that were before the old commission are deemed to have been lodged with the new commission. Is where we are starting. Is it fine? Yes, well.
This is the one that talks to the commission, that is no longer there.
Yeah.
So I mentioned yesterday, this particular commission we will have to redraft now that the commission is out of the box. So we will work on that.
Then let us look at it then. See, you also have to work on it.
It's 10 and 11.
10 and 11.
Yeah.
And those two, we have to rework on them.
Yeah.
We have dissolved the commission.
Yeah.
Don't bear in mind that Parliament has not passed the legislative bill. Parliament only dissolved, and no other person dissolved as tall. Okay, that's fine. This one will be reworked and deleted because anyway, it was a commission issue. We agreed here. So, can we move to 12 there, notwithstanding? We have changed the date there. Is the date still applicable? We are happy with the date. Can we move then to 13?
Chair, I just want to reiterate my concern.
Okay.
I just want to reiterate my concern about the lifespan of these traditional councils.
Your problem is that it is too long. Why is it not working, yours?
Because
or switch that one?
Yeah, Chair, I just want to reiterate my concern about the lifespan of these councils, and as I think we indicated, the department was going to come back to us with a diagrammatic representation of the various dates and the structures and the lifespans, et cetera, so that you can see, and before we go to the final submission to the House, I would really like that to be tabled to this committee.
Okay. Is that a staggered approach? And DG, I think we start from the local houses, and you go to provincial, regional one, where regional structures are there, or district areas, you go for provinces, and then provinces elect three. One of them would be a female. If there are three females, well and good, it's very progressive, but at least one should be a female, and then they go to national house or traditional leader. I think the staggered approach is very easy, that we don't have a situation where we have to wait, the point that was raised, that we wait for 2 years for a certain province not to meet and take a decision who are representing them there. Bearing in mind that we have also now given 50 plus one in terms of taking decision that can even dissolve themselves on that. Okay. This one. Four, okay. We'll just share this one with the colleagues. Do you have a copy there? Nanza yinkopi lapha. Nanza yinkopi. Okay. That's how it's going to be working. Okay, let us proceed to look at it, and it's just assisting us, the staggered approach that we have taken. You can't have a house national when you have not gone through all provinces sometimes, but also you don't want that provinces wait for 2 years. And then that's why there are time frames that we have put in there. The point that Honorable Manham was raising, that when people don't meet a time frame, there must be action by the ministry. Just to ensure, of course, within the reasonable period of time or so, with reasonableness. Okay, let us move to, that is what is being proposed. Can we move to 13, notwithstanding? It's consequential from national and it's provincial now. Can we proceed to 14, sub 14? Can we move to sub 15? Sub 16? Seventeen and 18, they are reversed. 19, 20, and 21. The yellow door, new clauses that we are proposing. Let's go to 16. Any consultation? Yes, well. It's just a diagram for time frames that are proposing. That's how they are going to be implementing it in terms of date, from local to national and kings and kingship. Professor, how many queens do we have now? Only one? The Lubelotuba?
We don't have a queen. There's a regent. She's still a minor.
Still a minor, yes.
Yes, but we have a queenship.
Okay, but in terms of traditional, she's only one queen, generally.
Yeah,
that is acknowledged. Okay. But that one is anyway a matronal one. Okay. Then they were going to have a queen forever. Okay. No, that's a secured crown. Matola is going to be the vice queen. Vice queen. Then there are no deputy queens. Okay, let us move on. Sub 18, as amended by the members of this portfolio committee. Sub 90, notwithstanding provisions. Sub 20A. Sub 20B. Sub 20C. Can we move to sub 21? Any instances? Okay, we have work on it, colleagues, and we should move on. 71 later, that's legislation is a here issue, the amended instant to say. Any issue on 71? Do you have any objection there? Repeal of the legislation 72.1. Sub 1 there. No issue there. Amended there, yellow to 73 sub 1. This act is called Traditional and Khoisan Leadership Act. Yes, sir.
73 sub 2.
Yeah.
Who's going to determine those dates? Because essentially what you're saying is that any dates in here can be determined. Different dates may be determined in respect of different provisions of this Act. So that any date in here can be changed. So I want to know who's going to determine it and whether or not it's going to come back to this committee, because you're basically changing legislation.
Not my understanding. Let's see the legal views. Pastor?
Jay, thanks. This is not about changing dates that the bill is providing for. This is about the commencement of the provisions of the Act. So what this provision is saying is that the President, in any event, has to fix the date of coming into operation of this bill when it becomes law. And all it says is that he can determine different dates for different provisions. In other words, for example, he can say that chapters 1, 2, and 3 of the bill comes into operation on 1 January, and chapters 3, 4, and 5, or whatever, comes into operation on, let's say, 1 April. But he can't change dates that are provided for inside the content of the legislation.
The date is about implementation of the Act. Yeah.
So then can we clarify the wording there? Because the way it's written, anything can be changed. I would suggest that commencement dates of various provisions of this Act may be so determined by the President in a proclamation in the Government Gazette, because it then specifies who has to make the determination and what it refers to, the commencement date of the different provisions. As I say, the way it's written here, anyone's up for it.
Yeah. The legal team, they will work it out. State law advisors, they'll work it out, and it shouldn't be so difficult. Shouldn't be difficult. Before we end the meeting, we'll endorse it. Not a bad idea to consider Melham a state law advisor. Drafting laws would be a good time to give him that responsibility. Okay, let's move on, colleagues. We got the wedding. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Take care. What will be your wedding?
The President may determine different commencement dates in respect of different provisions of this Act.
Okay. Can we move for code of conduct for members? Let us move to that one. Yes, ma'am.
Just on code of conduct for members of houses and councils, I think in the definitions, we need to have a definition for council, because otherwise it's open to whether or not it's not in my copy.
There's this one that says C 151 sub C there. No, one sub C council means a kingship, queenship, council, principal, traditional council.
Okay. I'm talking about in the definitions of the Act, not in the definition of the Code of Conduct. I just think that it would help with the interpretation all the way through.
Okay. Yes, sir. Honorable Dube, you want to make a point?
The code of conduct, as it is here in Schedule 1, has its own definition. So when you talk about members of councils here, it is the council as defined in this code of conduct. So it doesn't affect what is earlier in the bill. This thing is like a standalone in the schedule. So you, when you read the definitions, you must read the definition for the purposes of the schedule only.
Okay, very helpful. Bearing in mind, DG, that members of parliament have a right to ask any question until they are satisfied. The staff of government must always be very patient with members of parliament and do this with respect and diligence, because they are much more equipped on some of these areas. Members of parliament, they don't want to go to the chamber and become stupid there. And then Dr. Jose stand up there and says, what does it mean? A member of parliament is standing there now. He doesn't know how to explain. Members of parliament must never be robbed. And they must be everyone. They must be confident when they present anything to the chamber. Because there are hundreds of advocates there in the chamber. Can you imagine Professor Mutsega coming in and say, but this thing is wrong. Of course, he's also doing a lot of study on traditional leadership thing. And then you are a member there, you are debating seriously. Best then you can sit down and say, we made a mistake, we must withdraw the bill. We must refer them. Okay. Let's move to 152 of the document, that code of conduct now. We have looked at it broadly, but let us again show that we move clause by clause, just when we tighten things that are still loose, if there are any. Can we look at three? Yes.
Did we amend clause three? We had a discussion about 3B.
Yeah.
Where it was proposed that we amended to that member must recuse himself or herself from that particular meeting in terms of the code of conduct.
Yeah.
Because if you have a look at 5B, it says that a member must withdraw from the House or a council or committee of the House when a matter is as contemplated in paragraph A is discussed. Mm-hmm. So basically 3B is covering 5B.
Yeah.
But we need to amend it just so that they must recuse themselves from that particular meeting in terms of the code of conduct.
We have a lot of discussion on this matter. I think they've worked it out best.
3B, yeah.
I think we have worked it out really well. There's a long discussion about this. Of course, the parliamentary team also will look at it. And I'm sure that it's all, it doesn't sit when we're discussing about inkomozak. Okay, let us move to sanction for non-attendance of meetings. For yes, Honorable Mteto.
I wonder, Chair, that 4.1, is it not contradicting the new amendment in terms of the Labour Relations Act? Where it says a member after just 3 days, then that member must be removed.
Yes.
The Labour Relations Act doesn't apply to people who are remunerated by the Public Office Bearers, the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers Act. So they're not employees as such. So they don't fall under the Labour Relations Act. That's the first thing. The second is that there is a procedure that needs to be followed in terms of Section 10 of this Code of Conduct, Section 10 and 11 of the Code of Conduct, which specifies how that removal takes place. It's absolutely 100% compliant with the Code of Conduct for members of Parliament, for members of provincial legislatures, and municipal councillors. It's exactly the same wording as that.
That's the case, Chair, I'm covered.
But there's no harm to have a union for members of Parliament. There's absolutely no harm for us to have negotiators there for members. Sarah, they've not been increased for some time. Dr. Khoza, maybe Dr. Khoza can also be represented there, but it seems he's surrendering anyway. Let's move on and see. Okay, colleagues, let's move. And B, there's two, I'm sorry, there. Sub 2 or 4. Disclosure, let's move on that. 5. 1. And then sub 1, A. B. 2. Sub 2.
Just this whole disclosure of interest, this whole disclosure of interest section, I would suggest that we put in a clause maybe before A, must annually submit a declaration of interest on a form specified by the House. In a similar fashion that we do
members of parliament,
in Parliament, but
It should be 5 years. Every year, submit your declaration. So they change it from time to time. Best, I think that is not difficult. They are not members of parliament, though. But because we have covered them by Immunity Act and all that, surely, by and large, also must declare every year. Must declare in common. Professor Khubisa today. Okay, let us proceed, colleagues, and deal with the personal gains, that is 6 sub 1. A member name not subject to. Sub A. Financial interest. Of course, it assumed that on our DG, if the president or the NCOP also is happy with their work, it will pass, it becomes an act, it's signed. There will be some many workshops to conduct for members of the council to know, because many of them are part of many deals with big companies that are not really found wanting, and about some of the issues there. Honorable Melham.
Chair, can the department just unpack 6.1, where it says, a member may not, subject to item 2E, use the positional privileges of being a member. I'm not sure what they mean by may not, subject to item 2E, because item 2E says they may not disclose confidential information. And this is relating to using their position or privileges of being a member. So I don't quite get the relationship between the two.
Okay. The legal teams can assist us to clarify it a bit. Let's come back to it. Apply on access.
Chairperson, it would seem, I'm just looking at it briefly, it would seem that a reference to item 2E is more linked with confidential information. Because with 2E, you may not disclose confidential information unless required by law. And then you, in 6.1, you're saying a member may not use the position or confidential information obtained unless if you qualify by item 2E, unless required by law.
Chair, I can imagine no circumstances where the disclosure of confidential information to privately gain or improperly benefit a third person would be required by law. I can honestly imagine no situation where the disclosure of information would be required by law, where somebody is going to to benefit from it. I would prefer that we actually took out that section, the wording subject to item 2E.
A member may not to use the position. If that makes sense, though, colleague. Because you are very elaborate on that private, confidential information. Okay, let us take out the subject to item 2E as well.
I think, Chair, if we do take item 2E, we would also need to take that part that speaks to confidential information from
because
that.
Because it's covered there.
So that there's sense in the statement.
Yeah.
Because I think the subject to mainly maybe was meant to deal with the confidential information where then you can't claim all this because it's the confidential information that you've received while doing these duties. And now you are using it for purposes of personal gain, but then you want not to dispose it or for whatever purposes, whereas it may be needed maybe in a criminal case or something. So just to correct that, taking into account what the member has said, we need to also take out that all confidential information.
I disagree. Fundamentally, a member may not use the positional privileges of being a member or any confidential information that they obtain from being a member for private gain for themselves or to improperly benefit. Now, even in a criminal case, if you're asked to disclose information, is not going to improperly benefit somebody. It's the word improperly that is the key word there. You can't say that they can use confidential information. They can't use confidential information. It's very clear that they mustn't use confidential information to gain financially or to benefit somebody else improperly.
Okay. The legal mind, anyway, must work it out. I thought removing subject to item 2C was far better to remove it because it's already covered. And then allow them to just to move it, use position of being like members of parliament. We can't use any information that we get as members of parliament for our own individual advantages of families or friends and another person. And then, but lawyers, just look at it. I think we may find the solution there. Bester, it can be difficult to find some sense in what you are trying to do. Yes,
yeah, Chair, I agree with you. We removed that reference to subject to 2E. The difference between the two, in 2E, it's about you are not allowed to disclose information. In this one, the difference here is this one says you are not allowed to use it for personal gain.
Yeah.
So I agree that only that reference to subject to 2E be removed.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah, Prof.
I'm saying that we'll need to do a lot of workshops and sort of deal with this thing. I think it's going to make a difference.
Yeah, a big one.
After taking it, and of course, applying it also is important, making sure that,
Well, I think members of parliament can also volunteer their time to assist their traditional leaders in many workshops. Just to ensure that we don't really set them up to fail. Suddenly, many of them are taken to court. The Anglo-Platinum will come in there, a lot of businesses, and cause a lot of problems. Honorable Matsipe, they're in a call, and then can't make it now, and they will resign anyway to work in that situation. Okay, let us move on and deal with sub A, page 154. Be a party to or beneficial under a contract for provision of goods and services. I think it's very clear what we mean there. Obtain financial interest. You can also do that. For a fee. The members of parliament, though, they can do some work, provided that the chief whip of their party signs to give them permission. Because that one was as a result of many people who are members of parliament. Some of them have big labor laws, labor companies, and there are doctors, they're everywhere. At least if they're chief whip, I think, somewhere Makosin also, we must have some writer that unless it's approved, otherwise we can have a problem. Because we have a problem, but it's very clear here what we are trying to do. Because Honorable Masondo can go to Mthembu and say, Mthembu, I'm running a very successful labor firm, and therefore I need permission for you also to do my work. And then it declares those, whatever I get from that one. I think it was meant for that anyway, that we must also take the best in society because of declaration, then we reject them completely out. But trying to balance the two interests of the public interest and also some interests as long as they are declared that Chief Whip signs it. Let's move to C is fine. Three, if more than one quarter. Okay, the minister will be a principal. Okay. Declaration of interest.
Just to clarify something, I said earlier that it needs to be an annual declaration of interest, and I think this covers that that section.
Yeah.
But I do notice on 7.1, when elected or appointed, a member must within 60 days of his or her election declare in writing, I would say within 60 days and thereafter on an annual basis, and that would, then we don't have to put it in earlier.
Honorable Masondo is waiting for us until the end of September to make our declaration. By end of September, then the team. Of course, it's assumed also that Professor will have then a committee, whatever you call, that will deal with this registration of assets of members. Whether it's integrity commission or register like in parliament, one thing like that can work. But also there will be no reason why they can't share one with us, the parliamentary one here. They also declare there themselves. It's both private, confidential information and public information. I don't think can cause problem. Because anyway, we have to fund them ourselves. And there's no money as we stand. I think we should consider also doing that. They can declare to Masondo. They can appoint another person to sit there. But Masondo is sufficient, and I think is all of them, all the kings, come before Masondo and declare. He's going to be the big king and king to declare. Let us move to declaration 7.1A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. Yes, Bob.
I think earlier, a couple of days ago, we were talking about which things need to be declared. I think this is detailed enough.
Yeah.
And it excludes those usual cultural small things.
Yeah. They're included here.
And I'm saying it excludes those at least.
Yeah, I'm not fucking in booths.
Yeah, because otherwise it will be better.
Yeah, because there will be other cultural things, calabashes, all that. Yeah. I know that members of parliament declare, I thought we agreed that something should be declared, we must touch to ascertain the amount. Because you can't declare everything. There's something that you can't declare because they're not at that amount.
Yeah.
We don't want also to make them ready to declare everything. Some of them, they're giving knob carries, they're giving spears, all these things, really. Sometimes you may not want to. We are facilitating their work. We are not making it difficult for them to work.
Yeah.
And then all declarations are about that. It's not for punishment. Just to encourage people to be open about what they are doing. Okay. Let's move to sub 2. Any change? Annual, now there's annual there, Melham.
Yeah.
Your annual is covered there. Yes, ma'am.
If I may take you back. The declaration in terms of item 5, there's a distinction between that and the one in item 7. In item 7, the proposal is that the member must declare when appointed within 60 days and thereafter annually.
Mm.
And the things that the member may declare, they are listed in those paragraphs.
Yeah.
But if you look at item 5, it's the closure of interest. It's in a matter which is before the House or a Council where there's a meeting before
yeah.
that committee. If you have a conflict during
yeah.
that meeting, then
yeah.
you may declare. And it
yeah.
comes. It's not something that happens. You can't say it's an annual declaration.
Yeah.
It happens, yes. So the annual declaration is not necessary in item 5.
Yeah, it will be in there.
It's going to
yeah.
be in item 7. It will be qualified there.
Yeah. Okay, can we move on? Sub 2, page 155. Sub 3, gift received. Yes, ma'am.
I'm just trying to check. If they don't disclose, I'm just looking at the sector, the things listed on Section 7. And they don't disclose to the minister. What happens? Or is it perhaps there? Because if it's not, it doesn't spell out that maybe a small committee that deals with this, because this sector is, issues are very difficult.
Honorable Masano?
No, it may be useful in the somewhere in the crafting to ensure that the intention is spelled up front. And the intention of declarations and so on actually should be clear that it's not meant to be punitive, but rather to get people to work together, cooperate, be advised, be guided, and so on and so forth. Because once we talk declarations and matters of morality and so on, it's very easy for people to distort it, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, so to mean what they are not meant to convey. So the emphasis should be on rehabilitative type approach, provide guidance in relation to structures where they declare to, be assisted. Because if that element is missing, then people will be quick to say, here they are, they now want to lock us down to a system where they're going to punish us and persecute us. Persecution and so on it should not feature. The prominent thing should be being guided and so on. Of course, I mean, if people are wayward and they do things that are out of order, then they can be dealt with. But it must be clear that is not the priority. The priority is to get everybody to comply, to assist institutions as well. But the institution of traditional of traditional leadership to retain integrity, et cetera, et cetera. We have to find a way of doing that. Okay.
It's very useful emphasis that we are dealing with people who are very senior in communities. They must feel that we are treating them with respect. They don't feel that because some of us may not necessarily agree with them. Therefore, we are setting up all this mechanism to control them, to make it difficult for them to work. I think the point that Honorable Masonde is raising is an important one to note. Because even members of parliament take time to accept this thing of yearly declaration. And then until they realize that it's the ethical conduct of any member is suspected to be like that. We'll take time with them also. Let us move on the page 155. We had sub 3 there, gift received. The minister will determine the amount, really. And not more than whatever. That they don't declare really everything. Otherwise, there will be a lot of the patients be full. Man, everyone who goes there to seek a site. And then they have to declare clean feed dish or whatever. And there are too many of this. Well, that must be, you know, this thing, brandies.
What?
Brandy.
Brandy,
yeah. When you are meeting the chief, you must give a brandy sometimes as a token of appreciation. Then if they are going to declare all these brandies, then that declaring form, the declaration form must be absolute pages and pages. We should just be sure that the minister is sure what amount that we want them to declare. They don't declare every Coca-Cola tin, okay? Otherwise, we may make it very difficult for them. They need dignity. We need to respect them. They must never see this act as some form of punishment because they will resist it. If they resist it, very difficult for any government to implement a law that is resisted. And then, Honorable Mteto, you want them to declare more? Yes. Let's move to 4. The National House has authorized investigation. It must establish investigation committee. It's procedural issue. And then A and B is fine. Let's go to C or 5, sub 5. Sub 5. Any issue there that we think is not well placed? But Professor, is any member really ever appear before any committee? They've been working as a National House for some time now. It seems they've been behaving very well. Oh, that's good. But have they declared it? Not yet. Okay. Okay. Let us move on page 156. 156. Oh, no. I think my page is not working very well in Melham. Unauthorized disclosure of information. I think we have dealt with that confidentiality. Yeah.
One chair.
Okay.
9 sub 2A, where it talks about privileged or confidential information includes any information classified by the House or a council or committee of the House or a council to be privileged or confidential. My question is, do they have the authority to classify information? And Chair, that also raises another question, which if you go back to Section 46 of the Act, and particularly 46 sub 1C, page
109,
where it talks about restrictions of access.
109.
I believe that meetings of the National House, the Provincial House, and local houses should be open to the public except where they are closed in terms of the rules of order. And I think that we should put that in, because otherwise they just take a blanket decision to close the meetings and everything's closed.
These are public institutions, though, Professor. Or unless there's a reason why they close the meeting in terms of their rules of standing order. I think they should be public, really. If I want to go and listen how Amakhosi are discussing issues, I must be free, Stola, to do so. They are public already, Stola. No one can be stopped. They don't say this thing like emangcwabeni ukuthi awungeni uma ungagqokanga iblue or this skate yonke lento. Ayenzeki. Okay. Ronald, Mason.
Although, Chairperson, I mean, the from time to time, we have a situation where the people who work for security agencies abuse for their position, and they go about asking people for all sorts of information. I thought that something like this reference to unauthorized persons not having this undue power. If I hope I'm right. If it talks about that, then we should leave that as is. But if it's something else, then that must be explained. Because the people who run around the country, just make an example. Because there are many things that are secret, that are unknown to general members of the public. Anything we can come to you if you are a chief. And begin to say, well, you know, did anybody do a prospecting here for platinum? You know, this and the other and so on. This is very important information for the state, etc. When in fact that person has been instructed to do whatever he's doing outside of any state institution. It is a private project that he and his friends are running and so on. But part of the problem is, in fact, that where they're also running around and seeking to strike deals and to work for foreign companies and even foreign countries, etc., etc., etc. That kind of thing that presents a particular problem to traditional leaders who may not be suspecting anything untoward or who may be so ignorant that they really become just victims of all sorts of schemes and so on. I guess what I'm saying is clear. So we must also think about that, Chairperson. And if you want to phrase something, we must really spend a bit of time to carefully look at that and ensure that the harm is avoided.
Okay, colleagues, we'll try to work it out and put it in and down. Can we then move back to unauthorized disclosure of information? Page 156. Can we move to 9.1? A member may not without permission. 2. Sub 8. Yes.
Just if we get a clarity as to whether or not they have the authority to classify information as privileged or confidential.
I know that the MIS document, which is about security, you know, it's very specific in terms of who classifies documents and so on. So I do not know any legislation that empowers traditionally the House to classify this information in this regard. Maybe Dr. Bertha, if you
can I suggest that we leave it for now and that the department go and research that classification and bring it back when they come back with the amended bill
work it out. Let's move to A, B, C, and D. Choose up A, B, C, and D, page 156. Can you move 3, sub 3? Let's move 10. Ten sub 1, A and B. Move to 2, page 157. sub 3. Sub 4, A and B.
On 2, Chair, but I acknowledge what unauthorized in page 56, subsection 9 of the F, and clause 2 here. I think the involvement of the minister there is 2A. As you know, Chair, that whoever wants to appeal this decision after the involvement of the minister in the investigating part, for me, is too early. So let the House appoint the committee, investigate the matter, come up with the finding. Then if that individual wants to appeal the decision, it can be then taken to the minister. Here is just an investigation that goes straight, also inform the minister. That is going to, the minister will have, before a decision, it's going to have an insight of what is happening. To me, you are limiting the issue of the appeal process.
Honorable Masondo and Melham follow, and Dube.
No, I think what has been said just is the concept. How we deal with these issues, the breaches and so on, and the necessary organizations and structures that we put in place to ensure that this happens properly. In other words, you do want to avoid a situation as far as possible where the House will be preoccupied with the investigation of its own members. In other words, you meet there instead of discussing the issues, the institution turns into all kinds of witch hunts, accusations and counter accusations and so on. The key issue is that the House must do its work, be preoccupied with what we said the House is meant to do. And then, of course, in the process of people doing their work, problems arise. And then you must be able to answer the question, if these kinds of problems arise, who actually has them? Are there processes in place that are legal and so on and so forth? So that part is missing. It is a concept of when breaches occur, how are these going to be dealt with? In Parliament, there are various other institutions that are there. Some of them are relatively advanced, some of them are different in terms of development. They need to spell out very clearly what is it that these institutions are supposed to do. For instance, when you talk breaches, you must ensure that it's very clear that when you must firmly deal with the issues that when they arise, but you must also be fair. There must also be consistency in the way you deal with the issues. I mean, we have to have a concept for that. Ensure that there's consistency in the way issues are So what I'm saying is that what is missing, I think, is to institutionalize the identification of the problems and then the management of these issues and the processes that needs to be followed. If we spend a bit of time on that, I think it can go a long way. Because once that culture sets in, then many of these problems that have been arising will, I think, disappear or be dealt with.
Honorable Melham and Honorable Dube and teach you.
Chair, I find it utter hypocrisy on the part of Honorable Masondo to say that the members must not investigate their own breaches of conduct, given that he chairs the Ethics Committee in Parliament, which investigates the members of Parliament. Now, what this section of the Code of Conduct does is it replicates the same Code of Conduct that applies to municipal councillors, where a council has an investigation in-house. They report the outcome of that investigation to the MEC, who is the appeal authority. In other words, if there is a decision for sanction or whatever, and it's provided in this section, it's provided on page 158, subsection 6A, where it says a member who has been warned, reprimanded, suspended or removed may, within 14 days of having been notified of the decision of the House, then appeal to the minister on that decision. So the minister is the appeal authority to the decision of the House. And that's exactly the same situation in municipal councils. It's the same situation here in Parliament where your committee investigates breaches of the code of conduct of members. It's exactly the same situation. And you're saying that the minister must inform of the outcome. It's not the minister must investigate. It's the minister must inform what the finding of that investigation. He must be told, here's what we found, here's the decision that we took.
Informed by who?
By the National House. The National House must inform the minister of the outcome of any investigation. It's there in black and white. It's there in black and white that they must tell the minister, here's what we found, here's what the decision is. And then the member who has been reprimanded or warned or suspended or removed can go to the minister and say, I'm appealing. And that's there, because that's procedural fairness. And it's the same process that applies in councils, it's the same process that applies in Parliament, it's the same process that applies in provincial legislatures. And now we want to change it. I don't know why.
No, but I think there was a misunderstanding of the two areas. But let me check Tube wanted us to speak. We are covered. Let's go back to TG will come after me, Ted.
Page 58, Chair. A breach of conduct by members of National Assembly or of National House. Subsection 2 under 10. My concern, Chair, it says that the National House must inform the Minister of the outcomes of any investigation. Here we are talking about investigation. My point, Chair, is the investigation part must not be the first thing that must be informed to the minister. I'm saying it's too early to report to the minister the investigation. Because investigation contain a lot of allegations that can be proven correct or incorrect. And then, wait, madam, I gave you a chance. After that, Chair, I'm saying once a sanction has been sanctioned to that individual, that's when the minister must come on board. So that the minister must be an appeal body as a top structure. How do you go to a person that is already been informed that you are suspected of 1, 2, and 3? He was informed early, before finalization, by the outcomes of that thing. So how do I go and appeal to the same person? Therefore, it means you must have a neutral person to go and listen to your appeal. That's why I'm saying it's too early for the outcomes to be informed to the minister. Let's wait until the decision has been taken or the sanction. That's what must be informed, the minister must be informed about, so that you can appeal. How do you go to a person that has already been briefed about you and you still expected to go there and take a you go to present yourself to the same person for appeal. That's what I'm saying, Chair, that it's too early the involvement of the minister. He must be involved at a later stage as an appeal body.
TG.
I wanted to indicate that, going back to Honorable Masondo's point, that I think Section 10.1, where it says if the National House on reasonable grounds is of the opinion that a person or whatever breached this, the National House must, 1, 2, 3, given the previous experiences of the House, if you are not much more specific. Now, when we say National House, do we mean the chairperson alone? Do we mean, you know, because we have seen instances, the National House may see something, and then when he acts, there is a clause that is amended here, which was problematic. You know, when there are disagreements and they are suspecting each other, then they would have a vote of no confidence and removed, and we stopped it. To say, you know, there must be clauses, there must be fairness, there must be investigations, and so on. So I was just thinking that if we spell it, because for the first time it's going to be done, so that it's not an individual thing, if we intend to say the chairperson must, or should, or whatever, or a committee, because there's also an executive committee, and so on, because, you know, if we spell it out clearly, it would help.
Let me take one of
the Chairperson, I think on page 157.4, it says if the National House has authorized an investigation, it must establish an investigation committee. So there's going to be a committee that is going to do the investigation. And after the findings, then the minister is going to be informed. Not prior the outcome, but after the outcome of the investigation, then the minister is informed. And if the member of the house is not satisfied about the outcome, then he can go and appeal to the minister.
Honorable Masondo.
The question that I think faces us as a couple with this matter is how will breaches be dealt with? Will there be a committee, a structure, an ethics committee, for example? Where all of these allegations are going to be referred to, and then be investigated, and be concluded one way or the other. But the finalization of these matters obviously will have to be subject to the House looking at them. So we don't want a situation where unprocessed matters get tabled at the House of traditional leaders. That there must be processes of dealing with these matters. So that's what I'm saying is a concept that we may need to introduce. Not the details. The details can be dealt with through the code and through the established structure or committee and so on. In the same way, I mean, that parliaments and institutions globally are dealing with issues of ethics. They manage differently in different countries and so on. Now, the concept of ethics and religious structures and so on has arisen quite strongly in South Africa as we speak today. There's a lot of engagement with provinces, with municipalities. National Parliament is dealing with these issues in its own sort of ways and so on. Things are evolving. But clearly, there's no objection to the idea of ethics committees and the management of these issues, how these issues are referred to, how they are investigated, how they are reported back to the committee, and how the committee finally make whatever recommendations to Parliament, or in this instance, the idea would be how the committee reports these kinds of matters to the National House of traditional leaders. So it's a concept that we need to introduce. And there's plenty of reading material and research work that has been done on this in the world. So there's no, you won't struggle to explain it, DG, because it's a concept that's already being implemented. And if some of traditional leaders have a bit of a problem and so on, we can even take them abroad, one trip or the other, just to expose them so that they know what's happening elsewhere. Is in their interest as individuals, is in the interest of the institution, is in the interest of the country that we take such a pass. Otherwise, if there's a vacuum and there's no definite way of managing this thing, it will lead to problems.
Chair, thank you. Chair, first of all, I'd point out to Honourable Mtetwa that the word outcome means the end of the process. So the National House must inform the Minister at the end of the process of any investigation. In other words, what its findings were, what its decision was, etc. The end, an outcome is the result of the thing. It's not the charges that the person is alleged to, it's what they've discussed and discovered. That's the first thing. The second thing is, to Honourable Masondo, there is a very, very clear process in here. It's crystal clear. It says, first of all, if the National House, now I want to come back to that, because if the National House, it doesn't say if the chairperson or if the executive committee, it says the House as a whole decides that there is a breach of the code, is of the opinion, not that there is of the opinion that there is a breach of the code, then they must refer it to a committee. It's the same way that in Parliament, if I say, Honourable Masondo, you are a crook, I have to stand up and I have to make a substantive motion to refer it to the Ethics Committee. It's exactly the same thing. Here we are saying that if the House is convinced that there is a breach of the Code of Conduct, it must be referred to a committee for investigation. It says the National House must. Doesn't say they may, they must authorize an investigation. They must appoint a committee to do that investigation in sub 4. If the National House has authorized an investigation, it must establish an investigative committee. If there's an investigation and an investigative committee, then there must be findings of that committee. And then if they find that that member, sub 5, including the chairperson or deputy chairperson, has breached a provision of the Code of Conduct, then it gives them options. It says, you can do this, or you can do that, or you can do the next thing. But regardless of what they decide to do, they must inform the minister. They could decide to do nothing. They must inform the minister. And then, over the page, it says, anyone who's been warned, reprimanded, suspended, or removed may appeal to the minister. So the minister hasn't had any role whatsoever until that point. All the minister is the appeal authority. And then it says a little bit later on, 7, where the National House doesn't implement an investigation, and I'm not happy with the wording of 7, by the way, but where they don't implement an investigation, they must then the minister must authorize an investigation. So the first thing is, they don't do their job, and only if they don't do their job can the minister step in and authorize an investigation. But I'd like to come back to 7 because I'm concerned about
declaration of interest.
No. Sub 7, Chair. 10 sub 7.
10 sub 7, okay.
Where it says, if the National House does not have an investigation conducted as contemplated in sub-item 1 and the minister considers it necessary. I think that's a little bit clumsy And that you need to put in place a time frame that says that if a matter is reported to the minister must report it to the House. If the House does not have an investigation within 90 days of a matter being reported to it, the minister must then implement an investigation. Just so that there's a... But he must then establish an investigative committee who must then come up with findings, report to him and say, here are the findings. But the process is very, very clear. And I don't think that it, I don't think there's anything wrong in terms of administrative justice or procedural correctness or substantive fairness. I don't think there's anything wrong with this process. It's the same process we follow in councils, in parliament, in legislatures. Why are we wanting to try and change what is done everywhere else?
No, I just guess that we are engaging but in cross purposes. The point that I think is being raised, TG, is that the House of Traditional Leaders is composed of all these traditional leaders. Is it not a problem if I'm a member of a community to go to Inkosi, another Inkosi, and say, man, there's something wrong with Inkosi? And then, personally, I say that because I think the point that Masonde is raising is that to leave the traditional leaders to do what they're elected to do. If there are issues of ethics, there must be a committee that be, even members of the public, we can go there freely and say that Inkosi so and so is doing this and this and this and this and this, because it's difficult for a member of a society from any village to go to the House to report a king or Inkosi to the House. But if you report it, there's a reason why anyway. In Parliament, we have set up the Ethics Committee that members of the public can go there themselves and say, man, Member Mtakane got something wrong with him on this issue. They investigate it. They don't wait for me. They investigate it on that. Because it would be difficult for a member of society to come to report. I think that's the point that Masonde is raising, that we must consider doing that way. And Melham, in terms of the structure as it stands, is fine on that one. But in terms of what Masonde is saying, that therefore is public. And then if I know that Inkosi is getting involved in many deals, don't forget that in public hearings, a lot of the problem about the dealings, that they're very secretive, they're not explained to communities, money's got missing, there are a lot of millions of rand somewhere, they've been accusing the Northwest people, Mahatla, Onkel Ondole. But if people don't have a platform where they can quietly go there and say, man, this is the chairperson of Ethics Committee, I want to report this Inkosi is buying, is selling all the sites there, is causing so much harm, he's part of a problem. Then I think the point that Masonde is raising is that one. It's not wrongness of the procedure as it is designed here. I think the point that Masonde is trying to say that, why can't we consider doing that? That's the point that I thought we must apply our mind. Because difficult to report to, in fact, I wouldn't find a member coming to a public reporting to members of parliament about a member that is doing that and that. They don't do that generally. But they do to the Committee of Ethics. They report a lot of things that they report. It's not just reporting, even something that we read about on the media. The committee is able to call you to say, man, come and explain yourself here. There's this allegation. In the media anyway, no one comes there. I think that's a point, that a concept that we must apply our mind to. In terms of this process that we are putting here, it's very correct. You can follow it as it is. But also allow members of the public to be free to raise issues. Because one of the objections anyway of this issue was about that issue, that you don't have access to report our Inkosis. If I report to another Inkosi go and tell the Inkosi that so-and-so has come and said this thing, they say that there must be a platform that they'll feel free to report if there's a problem on that. Pastor, any problem with that? Yeah. No problem. Okay. Professor, fine. Joan, fine. Let us work it out in such a way that at least, that is a very serious house, DG. It's not a house that is disappearing tomorrow. Because also I know that some of us who are Republicans, we think that the Inkosis, they'll disappear in the next 1,000 years. They're not. Dawitas for many years, for many years. Therefore, we should set up an institution that will assist us to hold them also accountable, because they will have money from your department. It's a public money. But also society must be comfortable that if Inkosi Masipe is doing something wrong, that Masipe, I must be able to report to Ethics Committee. I think that's what I think Masond is raising. I don't think it's undoable. Taking what is happening already with Ethics Committee in Parliament and councils, I'm told also councils are on Masond. They do have Ethics Committees, and they're not necessarily councillors. But there will be councillors, but there are Ethics Committees. They go there individually, correct? We can do that also with the Chamber of the Traditional Leadership. I don't think there's any harm if we do that. Let us apply our mind there, Professor, write something there. Take the parliamentary one, look at it, and then see how it works, and put it in there. And then there's a...
You know, I think I just want to say that will go a long way.
Yeah.
In the sector, you know, in terms of it being respected.
Yeah.
And so on, if there's something like that. Because we receive these things, and sometimes they're sent to the disputes and claims, and they're sent to me, to the minister.
No.
And then we investigate it in an ad hoc fashion like that, yeah.
Honorable Malula, yeah?
Chairperson, I just want to get it clear. The Ethics Committee in Parliament, who constitutes it?
The members of Parliament.
Yes, so I don't know whether, when we say the National House or the House of Traditional Leaders, they must have an ethics committee or the disciplinary committee. Is it going to be people outside the traditional leadership or the people inside the National House? Or
no, I think the intention is to do...
committees.
There will be a committee of members of the National House. They will appoint three or four. They sit there, but the advantage is that they got a registrar. If I got a problem, I don't go to the Inkosi, I go to the administrator. I report issues, inform the chairperson of the Ethics Committee, then they investigate things. I think the point now, in terms of the procedure, when issues are raised by whoever to the House, then the House, then even opinion of the House then set up an investigating committee. We want something that a standing type of, is not going to spend more money because they are members of the House already. They are part of the Ethics Committee. And then I think Secretary and DG, you can have an administrator that is taking care of the declaration of interest, everything. If people got a problem, and then I don't need to go to Nkosi Maubane. I go to administrator and say, Nkosi Lena caused this problem, and then it's brought to attention of the chairperson of that. The point that you are raising, that can manage it far better. I think that's an issue that you are raising. It's almost... Honorable Maluleke, a permanent standing committee during the term of this one. And then with the administrator, that if you got a problem with Nkosi Maluleke, I go there, I say, no, Nkosi yaganga lena, ishaya abantu yenza yonke lena. And then they start that investigation. And then I think that assists for declaration of thing, because also we need a structure that gives trust. When I declare, I mustn't find my declaration on the media. And then it's something people don't want to declare sometimes, they're not sure about the institution, where they'll keep everything in confidentiality and other issues on that. But I think best we can work it out. Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to ask to get clarity. Is the intention to bring this ethics committee into the code of conduct part? Because remember, in terms of the bill, the National House, in terms of the provisions we dealt with yesterday, I think it was, the National House provisions, there's already provision for the House to establish committees of the House. So the Ethics Committee will be covered there.
Be part of those committees.
Yeah. So it's not necessary to bring it in here.
Something new. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the procedures, all the procedures are there in terms of investigation, all other issues there. Yes, Johan.
I think also cascade down to provincial houses.
Yes. So. Okay, colleagues, can we move to page 158? And Inkosi Dube is going to be the chairperson of the Ethics Committee. Inkosi Dube, the chairperson of the Ethics Committee. Let's go to 158, 6A. Sub A, sub B, sub C, sub D. Honorable Melham, 7. Is there an issue that I want to raise there?
Chair, my suggestion is that after the word sub-item 5, comma, where the National House has not instituted an investigation on any matter referred to it within 90 days of the referral.
Okay. That does give a deadline anyway, General. Okay. Okay, let us put it. I think there's no harm in putting it in your hand. You're fine? Okay. Pumelele, you're fine? Okay. Can we move to B? If the minister is of the opinion that a member of the House has breached a provision, I think it's clear. Can we go to Roman figure 1, 2, remove a member of the National House from office? Let's move to 8, sub 8, any investigation. The act there cited Promotion of Administrative Justice Act of 2000. 159 page where we are now. Let's take 11, the breach. But why the chairperson excluded anyway, Honorable?
I wanted to also raise the issue at National House level. What if the person who's causing problems is the chairperson?
Yeah.
And the other members may find it difficult to do something. So I'm just thinking that maybe we need to also look at those issues.
Johan, Bester, why Inkosi Matsipe is excluded? Is there?
Yeah, 157.5.
Let us see. But this side, 11.1, is excluding the chairperson there. That's what the issue was raising. And maybe we should, Joanne, delete that one. Because I think the point is that we can't exclude anyone. Okay. Can we move to 11, sub 1, sub A?
That, you know, in terms of the code of conduct, you know, as far as kings are concerned, sometimes I just wanted to check if we have the code of conduct of traditional leaders. Do we have that? Okay.
Honorable members, let's proceed. 11 sub 2. Let's move. C, okay. Honorable Malule.
One year, the committee of the provincial house or local house doesn't have the power to suspend, but the power lies with the premier.
You see, Chair, that's what we I differed with Melham. I draw him a picture, a little bit of an organogram here. He did not read. I will show him after this. My problem is the same point here, where you involve the senior level structure before finality of the matter. I'm saying investigate, discipline, take a decision. Then allow the person who's accused to appeal to the top structure. It goes to the same things here, where now, what happened if I've got a problem now in a province? It means that I must find the minister, which is going to be difficult for a member from that structure to find that level of a senior position. That's why I'm asking, I don't know whether this is too much yet, align the structure in such a way that it talks to each other, but not jump the organ, don't jump the protocol, the levels. Go level by level. I'm not challenging the issue of the system or also of the procedural. No, it's fine, but it don't involve the top structure. Like you go to a DG, you can't expect somebody from the local to go straight to a DG.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yes, Pastor, you want to make a point?
Yeah, Chair, I'm just thinking, the reason why, if we read this, we'll see that the council or the house has certain powers, and then the premier has certain powers. Now, remember, when these members are appointed, the premier is actually the one who establishes the councils and appoints the people. So it may not be fair to then say, well, if you have appointed the members to the council, that the council themselves can remove the members. So the council has certain powers. They may reprimand and issue the warning, but when it comes to the suspension of a person or the removal, then it's the premier who should do it. For that reason, because it's the premier who was actually appointing, in terms of the earlier clauses of the bill where it comes to the establishment of your councils. Just to explain why there's a difference between the powers or distinction who can do what.
Okay. I want to request honorable members to take 10-minute break. It's very difficult for staff to be out sometimes when you are continuing. Let us take a 10-minute break.
I'm going to Thank you. Coming with?
Melham.
Chair, how are you?
You know Noti? Musa.
No, don't think I do.
I think you're a friend.
From where?
From Alexander.
From Alexandria?
Mm.
In the Eastern Cape?
No.
In Joburg?
No. I'm from the Eastern Cape, eh? Oh,
okay.
Alexandria in the Eastern Cape.
Oh, okay.
By Port Alfred.
Very small town.
Just outside of Africa.
Yeah. Why do you know it so well?
I spent over about 5 years in Grahamstown.
Okay. Grahamstown used to be my constituency.
Is it?
Yeah, Grahamstown, Port Alfred, Alexandria, that used to be my constituency.
Sweet. And then you
Mlambe Makana.
Yeah, Mlambe Makana. Yeah.
So, Port Alfred, Bathurst, Grahamstown, Alexandria.
Sweet. And when did you move to Cape Town?
Well, I moved to East London, and that's my constituency.
Supporting. No. Titichi, there's no harm at all to talk to Honorable Matsipe.
No, we are talking about the fact that there are no measures
for kings.
Yeah.
Oh, the kings are kings. To deal with the discipline of kings.
Yes. That's
the king don't sit in a traditional house. They got their own king council. That king council has not been established yet, but this bill is going to assist us to establish a king's council.
What happens when a king beats
up his wife? Well, it's an internal issue. Let's move on, and but the king cancels also and queen's cancel, because there's only one key queen, therefore be king cancel and a queen. It's a non-racial non-sexist structure. They will sit there. Surely there will be some guidelines also how they work. TG. Just guidelines of a king. We have not touched on them, but surely. A general way how they work. It's a question of democracy anyway. That's why if now...
Just to make sure that, you know, that environment must be regulated.
Yes.
So it's a problematic area.
We must work it out after this. How we deal with the best. Immediately after this, we're dealing among King's Council. But they won't have a chairperson and a deputy because there are six? How many kings are seven or eight? Seven kings. Eight. A committee of eight. Okay.
Calling a meeting with all of them. It's like calling.
It's difficult.
Very difficult. They didn't make it at the airport. Or Tambo airport. So that it must be, it's so difficult.
No king wants to visit another king's territory.
Sure. It's difficult. And the protocols, we know the protocols. We know all of them ourselves. They don't know each other. And then there is. I made two holding rooms, and when they came in, the deemed kings, do not greet the deemed kings, and I didn't anticipate that. So when they walk in, now I have, if I sit with a deemed king, then it's big trouble. As they were walking inside the room, then I would welcome, because they all know me. I welcome them, Your Majesty, and please take a seat, and then they take a seat. And then I see a team coming. And then they don't even look at the team. The team doesn't even go that side. And then I'm sitting and saying, how am I? We had the two holding rooms. It was Minister Mteto at the time. Now, the minister arrives. Then I excuse myself. I go to the other holding room. I say, Minister, the tensions in that room, you can cut it with a sharp knife. And he says, what we do? Then I said, no, I have to introduce you. We've got to go in there. When we got there, then he's greeting them one by one. And I have to know that I start with the real king from the ego, because the meeting can be stopped. And then after they finished, and then I said, Minister, please don't even sit down now. Let's ask that we move. We move and start the meeting. When we start the meeting, they sit in front. And then I'm program director. And then the minister is engaging the kings. The kings are quiet like this. And he did not know that they don't talk to you. The people they came with will be answering you. Somebody wrote a piece of, why are the kings quiet? I said, kings don't talk. What do you talk from the back there? And then a hand came up and said, they said, who are these ones sitting here? We don't know them. We are the only king. No, we had to be fair. I said, no, in terms of the law, these people are kings. So, you know, that's why we have called all of you. They're also kings. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
The Queen's Council and the King Council is coming, and Honorable Mteto, some protocol, declaration form. Let us go to page 160. It's a difficult situation. Let us go there. 3 sub A. Sub B. One, two, three, four. Four. Commission Act agreed. Can we move to 5? Any investigation in terms of this item must be conducted in accordance promotions. Promotion of Administrative Justice Act of 2000. Pastor?
Jay, sorry, just to take you back one step. Remember on the 11.1, the words that it says excluding the chairperson? When we discussed it earlier, we said we should remove those. Just to point out, on page 160, subclause 3A, there's a proviso that says that more or less in the half of that page, provided in the event of an alleged breach of the code of conduct by the chairperson, then the premier must take the necessary steps. So that explains why under 1 it says members excluding the chairperson, because he has a specific procedure then in respect of the chairperson.
Okay.
Thanks.
Can we move on? 162, let's pass on that one. 163, we pass.
Are
it.
Are we passing on, Jeff?
I don't think it's necessary. Oh,
okay.
Taking an oath.
Sorry, Jeff.
Taking an oath, okay.
No, this is legislation, Chair. We've got to deal with it comprehensively. Chair, there's 4 words that I want inserted after procedures of the House. I want, comma, subject to the Constitution and all other laws of the Republic of South Africa. On 162, after it says rules, orders, and procedures of the House, comma, subject to the Constitution and all other laws of the Republic of South Africa.
Okay.
And the same on the next page, Chair. Also, Chair, it's common practice in all our legislative bodies that you can take either an oath or an affirmation.
Yeah.
And this is very specific that it's an oath. can we amend it so that it's an oath or affirmation and that it says, so help me God, or I do solemnly swear?
Yeah. Yeah, we can next page.
So the same on this
one,
okay. Okay, there we go.
B, we are fine there, taking what the Honorable Melham was raising, the constitution of the country.
No, Chair, we must doubly check that. And we've got the standard one that we have for the House. Maybe before I agree, I must check that one. So
that's it.
Is that what it says?
That's what it says.
No, but if it comes from you, I must check it first myself.
Chairperson, I'd ask that Honorable Mthethwa withdraws that slur on my integrity.
Yes, much withdrawal.
But
I withdraw, Chair.
Yeah, you can see when friends are joking, don't take them too serious. Friends are joking, really. They're not attacking each other. But the point, though, that can't be different from the oath by members of parliament. You can differ here and there, but it can't be too different. I think we are paying allegiance to the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. That's why Melham is correct. That is the first thing that we are paying allegiance to, is the Constitution of South Africa, nothing else. The rest really is just to embellish the approach. I think the affirmation also is fine. So, where does this one now come? It's because of this Amakhosi. May the ancestors guide and sustain me in keeping this affirmation with honor and dignity. It's because Amakhosi. Okay. They affirm to the ancestors. Okay.
Chair, what happens if you have an Inkosi or who doesn't have religious beliefs? Can we put as an alternative, I do solemnly swear?
I just think that one is much more neutral. Much more neutral, because we may have a Shembe king somewhere, and then we get other things. I don't think it's... We must just avoid it, putting it in a man that is discriminatory. There will be king in the next time. They are not really ancestors type of kings. And then there will be born again kings. And of course, they can take an oath, the born again, but there will be kings who are spiritual, but they don't belong to any religion. They will maybe a little bit take another view on that. I solemnly swear, it's far better. It covers those who take the oath. I think the oath of members of parliament is very sufficient to start looking at it. We can then adopt it accordingly here to address the king. It just, of course, we are addressing the current situation. But again, the law is not about now. It's also about the future until it's amended. And then we must be futuristic in approach. I know that, DG, you have convinced me that I will never get rid of the kings and queens. I must learn to live with them. I accept now that the next 1,000 years, I'm with them.
Unless there is a revolution in the
country. It should be led by you. Let us go to 164. Of course, as we clean it next time, we'll be able then to pick up some of the smaller issues that are there. Can we move to amendment of legislation? That's what really is there. The underlined one that I inserted, the bracketed one, I'm told that Johannes deleted part. Okay. Can we move on? Yes, ma'am.
Chair, I'm just worried about... that it doesn't say anything and whose recognition has not been withdrawn. In other words, you're saying, well, all these people are office bearers, but surely once their recognition is withdrawn, they're no longer an office bearer.
Mm. Okay. Professor, do you follow on the point?
Yes, thanks, Chair. I follow. If the recognition is withdrawn,
the that particular individual will no longer be a traditional leader.
Yeah. Can we move a sub 2? Or not sub 2, Roman figure 2? Dates are changed. But Melham, the president, can change all these dates. Okay, let's go to 3 non-traditional leaders. 3 of 165.
I'm actually confused here, but can a non-traditional leader be a member of a kingship or queenship council, principal traditional council, traditional council, traditional sub-council? They
yeah.
can. Okay.
In under what circumstances?
A non-traditional leader who is a member of any kingship or queenship council, principal traditional council, traditional council, traditional sub-council.
Yes, Professor?
Chairperson, yes, if you share the elected election portion of the King's Council.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay.
Can we move to 2165-2?
Sorry, Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
To provide a framework for determining the salaries and allowances, da-da-da-da-da, non-traditional leader members, and then we're deleting a whole section. So we're not saying, it says non-traditional leader members of what, if we delete all of that stuff. And members of houses. Houses of what? So, I think we just
1 to 166.
It's from 165
to 166.
To 166.
Yeah, 12.
And I think we need to leave or to put in the correct wording. Non-traditional leader members of whatever they must be members of, and members of houses of traditional and Khoisan leaders. At national, provincial, and local level,
Professor?
Something like that.
Yes, that's
thanks, Chair. These are amendments to Section 1 of the Remuneration Act. Section 1 being definitions. This particular one on page 166 is the first definition that has to be amended, which is benefits. If we turn the page just to 167 for the moment, the other definitions in that act appear there. So you have the definition for Khoisan leader that will come, member of the house, non-traditional leader member, etc. So when you read the one on 166, where it refers to non-traditional leader members, Khoisan leader, and member of the house, you turn the page, then we have member of the house definition there. So these are just the definitions in the Section 1 of the Remuneration Act that are changed to be aligned with what this bill is proposing in general.
Chair, my concern is not with the definitions.
Yeah.
My concern is with the long title. If you go back to 165, so if you read the long title, and I'm going to read it with the deleted part taken out. It says, to provide a framework for determining the salaries and allowances of the President, members of the National Assembly, permanent delegates to the NCOP, Deputy President, ministers, deputy ministers, traditional leaders, Khoisan leaders, non-traditional leaders, and members of houses. Non-traditional leaders is everybody. You can't have that in a long title. You need
yeah.
to say non-traditional leader members of.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps if we take on the actual introduced bill at page 64, I think that's what my colleague was referring to there, to say on page 64 of the introduced bill, there is a C there which says, by the insertion after the definition of minister of the following definition. Non-traditional leader member means a non-traditional leader member of any kingship or queenship council, principal traditional council, traditional sub-council, Khoisan council, blah, blah, blah. So I think the off is covered within the definitions as to non-traditional members of what?
Chair, my point is, again, not that the definitions are wrong. I agree that they're covered in the definitions. My point is that you can't have the long title of the Act not being specific. Your long title must say what it does. And if you're bringing in definitions later, that's all well and good, but be specific in that long title. I don't see what the issue is here. I'm not asking for a context change or anything like that. I'm just asking that we clarify in the long title non-traditional leader members of national, provincial, and local houses of the traditional leaders in Khoisan.
There's no issue on that here. So the nine of these houses, all the houses, we have some nine people there who are not necessarily traditional leaders. Except in Duna. Yeah. Okay. Can we move to 167? Just explanation there. Definitions. Office bearer, 168, deleted bear, traditional leader, you said what is a traditional leader with deletion there, Khoisan leadership there, 4, sub 4, the following section here by substituted to section, deleted there. That's 5-1, traditional leaders, Khoisan leaders, non-traditional leaders, members of, is deleted there, we'll put it on down. Page 169, traditional leaders. Then we have inserted the members of the house. 5.5 sub 1 sub A. Page 169, any recommendation of a commission? This is a commission for members. Public office bearers. That commission is still there. It has not been dissolved. But it's not working. Is it working? I know, it's not working. Why? Sleeping on duty, Nyambo says that. There's no movement for that. That they must see for the 2019 never had an increase. Let's move on. There's a big deletion there and different members of the houses. We move to C, affordability, and then D, current principles. C, the need of a promotion of quality, uniformity, salaries. F, the enhancement of cooperation, unity and understanding between traditional communities and Khoisan communities nationally. G, H, let's move on to 170, that is sub 2, despite the provision. Bolded areas there, deleted until when we say and a member of the House who holds different public office simultaneously is only entitled to salary allowance, okay? 2A there, 2 sub A, page 17, this subsection, 2B, where only an allowance. We've included co-ensign leaders were excluded before, and we have put them in now. Let's move to 3 sub A, the president may, deletion there of the bolded one, until or a member of the House shall be entitled subject to such condition as the president may prescribe. Pumelele, on the main bill that we are having that side, is it improved now? Deletion have been effected. Let's move on to 171.4, the amount payable, and then there's a deletion there for a big chunk of the paragraph, all that side of it, all of them gone. Can we move to 6? Despite the provision of subsection, a member of the National House of Traditional and Christian Leaders shall be entitled to an allowance as determined by the President in Proclamation and Gazette. 172 performed in effect of the 10 April 1997. Yes,
well. I just wanted to make a point on 6.
Okay.
That in future, for the purposes of incorporating the Khoisan leaders, it's good to make a distinction where we say a member of the National House of Traditional Leader of traditional and Khoisan leaders.
Yeah.
That is the title of the bill.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying in future, whether you are Khoisan or whatever origin, you are a member of the National House and
yeah.
other houses like that. For the purposes of the future, we may have a situation where people feel they are different from the other leaders. But, you know, we had to emphasize this now so that it's understood as such.
Is a transitional arrangement.
Transitional sort of
it may take 50 years for them to accept one nationhood.
Yeah.
It's not going to be easy to build a new nation. It takes longer than expected.
Awesome.
But we start indicating on that. And for the purposes, because it's about recognition of them, that's why I always highlight them. Just also when they read the bill, they find themselves there in the bill. And then I think that's the only purpose. DG, thanks. Let's move on. Let's move to 6, Section 9 of the Remuneration Act. Is hereby amended. Again, just including a co-ensign, a non-traditional leader member. A non-traditional leader member, in a classical example, who can be that one? Who's a non-traditional member, but the president must decide his or her salary? Yes, ma'am.
Sure. These are the elected members.
Who? Okay.
Of the council.
Okay.
So they are not part of traditional leadership.
Okay.
And so on. And so on. Yeah, these are the
kings.
These are the members of the community.
Oh,
the elected ones.
The 60% one.
And also the appointed.
The 40% one.
Yeah.
Oh,
and the elected community members. Yeah.
Okay. The president must decide also their salaries, stipend. Okay. Sitting allowances. Okay. Induna and Zongales. Induna are included. President was going to sweat, but deciding for Hinduna. Okay, Honorable Mthetho, the commission is going to work now. 15, do not they need their salaries very soon? And, let us move to 174, Amendment to Local Government Municipal Structures Act. There's no issue. 7(1). Participation of traditional and co-leadership in municipal council. I think we have made the point there. We have clarified how they're going to participate. And let's move to 175, traditional council definitions there. Bob, thank you very much. No major changes there, the new thing that we are putting in general, because of we are also repealing some of the acts as we move on. Roman figure 2 of sub 2, local house may, in respect of each local municipality, falling within the area, enable
Madam. Chair, I'm concerned with 2B Roman 2. So, at a local level, under 2A, you have the chairperson and two other members from the local house participating in the local municipality. But under 2B, you've got the chairperson of the district house and two members from the district house, plus you've got at least one but not more than two members from every single local house of a local municipality. And it strikes me that in a large district, and I think, for example, of maybe the Sara Bartman District Municipality in the Eastern Cape or the Vembe District Municipality in Limpopo, you may end up with, I don't know, 30 members representing local councils, local municipalities. I don't know. If you've got a local house for the district, shouldn't the chairperson and two members from the local house be the representatives? Just like you've got a local house for a local municipality, you've got the chairperson and two members for the local house of a local municipality representing on that council. Shouldn't it be the same that we only have three members and they're the three members from the district house?
John? John?
Thank you. I think we need to understand the establishment of local houses. There are two options. A local house can be established within the jurisdictional area of a district municipality. And the local house can be established within the jurisdictional area of a local municipality. When the house is established at the, let me say, the district level, the chairperson and two members of the district, of the local house within the district, plus one or two members from each local municipality falling within the district, will go to the municipal councils. It will be reps there. But when the house is established at a local level throughout, it's only the chair and two persons. And I've got the figures here countrywide. You will have a situation of when the house currently, I think you also have to see it in the relation to the current participation of traditional leaders in municipal councils. Currently, countrywide, there are 805 traditional leaders participating in the district and local municipalities. Throughout the country.
Okay.
If you establish a local house at the district level, and the there's an option with the local municipality, one or two members. If you take the chairperson and two, plus one from each local municipality within the district house, there will be 198 members countrywide. If you establish it and you have two members from each local municipality plus a chair, deputy chair, it will be 315. If the houses are only established at a local level, the members that traditional leaders that will participate is 354. So you can see there's quite a big decrease in the membership of traditional leaders participating in municipalities now. So there are two options. And within the district option, there's also an option of one or two from the local except the chair and deputy chair of the house. But to bring in, I would say, representativity
especially where you've got big local municipalities where there are quite a big number of traditional councils within it. It's always a good thing for participation and representativity to have that arrangement. But overall, there's quite a big saving in the question in terms of numbers of traditional leaders participating in municipalities now.
Okay. Numbers?
Do you take into account more or less the figures of the COI and SAN when they would be on board? What would be the figures now?
I must say for this, I didn't do that because the way branches will work will be quite, you will have to have the exact figures before you can really calculate the numbers. So for that one, I didn't take it
into account. But out of 800 currently, we'll have about 400.
It won't go more than that.
It won't go more than that throughout the country. It's not a bigger team. They are catching a large number. In fact, almost half is gone. Because I don't think COI and SANOS will be so much many because of the process, the screening, and all that. Yeah. But also, these leaders, they're observers there, truly speaking. They can participate if they ask to be participating, but they can't make any decision. In terms of decision making, they're immaterial. But of course, they will be listened to. But the council, they are very important in other areas. I think they are very positive also on developmental issues. Yes, sir.
I was saying that the options also help in terms of, because if you look at the issues of efficiency and effectiveness, when people are considering the options, as he has provided in the figures, that also is quite a useful thing to use, rather than what was in Section 81. It was saying 20% of traditional leaders, the MEC must do 1, 2, 3 with the 20%.
Yeah, difficult.
It was a fixed thing. So this is quite a streamlined kind of process.
Then there will be no general cry that you are increasing financial burden because you are reducing it anyway. And then because, okay. Johan?
Chairperson, what I also want just to add, as DJ has said, the process currently to identify leaders is a cumbersome thing because they must start to identify and at the end the premier must, by notice, identify the people. Now it's very easy. If the houses are there,
yeah,
it's automatic. There's no administrative things that need to happen.
Okay. Can we move to 176? That is C. Those are all new amendments. We've looked at them before a little bit. Let us apply our mind now.
Can I just point something out?
Yeah.
That this amendment is going to be the single longest clause in the Systems Act. Structures Act, sorry. It's going to be the single longest clause by a long shot to accommodate three members who may observe. Effectively, we're putting in pages and pages and pages of legislation for three people in a local municipality who can't vote.
They're too important. That's why we are breaking a record. They're very important, 3 people. But we'll try to make it work, though. The whole issue that we must much be clearer there, because if you are not clear at the local level, you can cause so much harm. Competition and fighting and all that would not assist us to do so. Far better to be much more explicit in terms of the yes, ma'am.
I also wanted to indicate that the traditional leaders have been complaining, and you know the high percentage to say, you know, their participation is not meaningful in terms of Section 81.
Yeah.
So in the way he has explained now, to say there will be no longer the owners in the premier MEC to identify and all those kinds of things. And the issues of stipend, it's also minimized here because they are earning a salary. You know, they don't have to get a stipend when they go and participate in this. And then they have to attend those meetings and put the issues of their villages on the table as well.
Okay, colleagues. Traditional leadership system is very complex.
Yes.
Let us move to C. 176, where there are no local houses within an area of jurisdiction. Let's go to Roman figure 1. The MSC must hold a consultative meeting. Roman figure 2. The senior traditional leaders and senior coalition leaders. And then sub AA, sub BB. Let's move to sub D. At least at that.
See, yeah. I have a problem with D.
D.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with the concept, but let's take a local municipality. The MEC must hold a consultative meeting with all the recognized traditional leaders and senior Khoisan leaders, and from amongst themselves must nominate one such person for the local municipality. Now, if you've got one person, how is that going to be one-third woman? And if it's not necessary that it be one-third woman, must it be a man or a woman?
Mm.
It just, there's a logical inconsistency here.
For one person, surely. But some can balance the two well. Some can balance the two very well. Some would be women, some would be male in other areas. They will try to balance it accordingly. But the point that you are raising should be a little bit cleared. Okay. Can we move to... If at least one person should be women.
But
the point that if there's only one person, can't be male and female, it's one person.
Is it male or is it female?
Yeah. Then we can then balance it by taking the totality of the whole area and say that a third of that area as a whole, local authority, is women. Because if you are seconding one, one, one would be male or women. It can't be any other thing. No.
There are people who got first, they can.
We should consider that?
Consider that?
I agree. Let's move.
And the other issue is that where the MEC has got to come in, and we have used masks.
Yeah.
And in Section 81, many MECs didn't do anything. You know, to deal with the 20%. And because the thing is, if there are no consequences, even if it is a must, we then say, so what? If one hasn't done it, and I'm just checking, you know, to make sure that these things are made to work.
Sure, one way or another, the MEC must be accountable one way or another to the minister. Because I think we're giving 30 days, 60 days, 90 days to ensure that people are given enough time, but failure to do so, the minister must always assist to interfere. Otherwise, the whole thing won't work anyway. People won't implement it or sit down there. We should tighten up in terms of the time frames of people doing things. If it's 60 days, 60 days, not, then the minister can be able to intervene. Because if there's no intervention, general won't work. Ministers also, people general are not so much enthusiastic about getting involved in traditional affairs. Very few MECs want to get involved in that area. And then we have to encourage them to work out that way. Let's move to 177. G, the election of a nomination of participating leaders. Can we move to 3A? A person may not be a participating leader if or she is underage, not South African citizen, not a recognized senior traditional leader or Khoisan, has been converted. We have dealt with this qualification. Yes.
Sorry, Chair. That raises a question. What happens if in a local municipality there are no senior traditional leaders or Khoisan leaders? What happens if there are only traditional leaders? What happens if in a local municipality there are no senior traditional leaders. There's only a traditional leader.
Or a headman.
Or a headman.
I think that there can't be a local house.
No, there won't be a local house. There is no local house. There might be a traditional council.
If there's a traditional council, there must be a senior, because the senior is the ex officio head of the traditional council. So if there's no seniors, there can't be no local house, there can be no council, traditional council.
So in that particular instance, there would be no local house.
To be represented by a white councillor.
Maybe.
Yeah, no. What councillor will represent them? Johan?
Yeah, I think it's also a good question, but what happens? It is possible that there might be a recognized headman within a local municipal area where there is no senior municipal.
Mm-hmm.
But he will now work through the council, so, and that council will then be represented.
Tishi?
You know, one of the points, this point here remind me of something. If it is not covered, it's a very problematic issue now.
Okay.
There are many people masquerading as kings, and they even go public on television to say, I'm king so-and-so. And one day somebody came to report to us to say somebody in Tshwane, the city of Tshwane, that person is operating from people register and pay money. This person is masquerading as a king.
We arrest that.
And, you know, when you report and you don't have any law to prevent things like this, there are events. I went to an event. I was invited. I was a participant in the event. Many of you would probably know from Gauteng, there's somebody called King Molefe. He's not a king. He goes...
From the Val.
Yeah, from the Val, surrounded by people. Now, everybody in that... There were close to maybe 1,000 people in that hall, and then everyone saying, Your Majesty, and so on. It is when I stood up and said, there's no Majesty here. You know, there's no one who's Your Majesty here, and so on. He didn't sit up to the end. But, you know, what do? You can't call police to come and do something about it. I'm just saying, while we're dealing with this legislation here, that people must understand that it's unlawful. It's like fraud.
It's fraud, yeah.
You know, something like that. So I'm just saying...
But the issue should be in, because there are many. There are many, in fact. Some of them, anyway, came to us also here in public hearings. And I think there were 24 or whatever from Western Cape, for that matter. They are really convinced in their mind that they are traditional leaders. And therefore, there are a lot of kings outside there. And there's King Melham... of the Makakai. There are many kings outside there, but all of them are not recognized. There are only eight that are recognized, including the queen. But many of them, in fact, people are donating money.
Yeah.
And then they give them money. It's fraudsters, generally. But there's no law that can do that. That's the point that I think we must really tighten it up. Because it's causing more harm than good to society. Yes, ma'am.
Can you just go back to the numbers for a second?
Okay.
The professor said that it worked out that there are fewer numbers, but I want to use the Sara Bartman District Municipality as an example again. So currently there are 30 councillors in Sara Bartman, and they represent 7 municipalities. In terms of the current legislation, they would be allowed to have 6
full-time
traditional leaders participating. 20%, isn't it?
Currently,
district municipality, they would be entitled to 6 traditional leaders participating. In terms of this, they would have the 3 from the district house, plus at least 1 and possibly 2 from each local municipality, which would take them to 17 traditional leaders in that council. Now, if there's a district house, they would have the 3 plus the 2 representatives from each local municipality. A maximum, admittedly, but if it's not, it's between 10 and 17 is the number that you're looking at there. So it would increase substantially in that case.
Chair, thank you. Let me just
see whether I can explain this if I understand myself correctly. I understand what member is saying. But when the local house is established for the for a district, municipality, then the persons who can participate at the district municipality is the chair plus two. It's three. Right? It says here, where a local house has been established for the area of jurisdiction, this is on page 175. Roman 1, the chairperson of the local house and two members,
that's
three, may participate in the procedures of that council, of the district municipality.
And
then it says, the local house may, in respect of the local municipalities falling within the area of jurisdiction, in other words, not in the district municipal council, but if there's five local municipal councils on
they'll participate there.
Then they, because you have the chair and two in the district.
Okay.
But, so it's three maximum still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I misunderstood completely.
Now, I also had to read it again too.
That's all of them, they go to district.
Yeah.
Yes.
The local one remain local, there are three of them.
There will be one,
three,
maximum two then
two,
in the local.
And then from there, national, two, three, that'll be fine. It reduces the number a bit. Let us move to 178, colleagues. I think in terms of qualification there, we have dealt with it. DG, the point that you are raising of fraudsters, we must find something where it would be illegal formally. Yes, sir. Joanne also want to come in there.
Just the worst matter that was reported on the fraudsters. In Africa, one lady posturing as the queen of the Khoisans in South Africa was hosted by the president of that country. And I was sent the picture to say, do you know this queen of then? I said, there are no queens in South Africa. So they then said we must do something. We said, what can we do? You know, we don't have a law that deals with this thing like this.
In fact, some of them met with the king of Morocco. Those are posters, really, with all this regalia. The queen, the king of Morocco is very happy. He's hosting daily that she was sort of, but he's a fraudster. I'm not sure why foreign countries also, they don't check with their own embassies. They simply invite everyone to come. Let sources go for them if they are sleeping. But we should find somewhere in the bid that we declare that as an illegal Pumelel. 7-9. Okay. Okay. I think it's there now. Is there a new clause? It's just to guide against this. And then, but therefore, is a person can be arrested and be charged. Three years imprisonment. 3 years is too small. I thought they were going to 5. It's illegal to do. Let us move on, colleagues. 178. B12C. The death. D. Sub 4. A and B, yellow 1, U 1. Let's move to 4 sub C. Must attend and participate in any meetings. D 179. D is a subject of the appropriate code of conduct. Is not entitled to vote. F may address the municipal council on any matter directly or indirectly affecting traditional or coin sand. Roman figure 2, any other matter. 5, A and B. Let's move to 180. Elected or participating leader who has previously been elected or nominated may serve consecutive term.
C may not request any other person to participate. Let's go to 6. DG?
Saying a participating leader must within 3 weeks from date of municipal council prepare a report, which is a good thing, but
yeah.
For traditional leadership sector,
to give report,
they'll have to be assisted.
Okay.
In terms of writing report.
When I was told. What you are saying is that they must prepare report and they must be accountable and report the staff that they were accompanying them. I think it would be a good take out minutes, but also they can get that from the council, what were decision taken by the council, and then they are given information to go and report. May not be expensive for us using the state organs that are there already. 6. Let us move to 7. A committee. Move to A sub 8. Under sub 8 there, the A, B, C, D, M. 181. D, let's move A, B, to facilitate involvement of traditional core.
We support urban policy, promoting integrated local economic development, and then B, facilitate, E, make recommendations, participate in development of policies and bylaws at the department. Director General, General Municipalities don't implement their bylaws. They are not enforcing it. There are too many bylaws, but they are not being enforced. The H, promote the ideas of cooperative governance.
The issue of the bylaws, we were looking at it from a different angle in terms of culture. That in urban.
Their team must draft bylaws for local authorities. They must look at it and see what they can do to assist them to enforce the existing bylaws. But I take the point. People from rural areas are migrating to urban areas. They are slaughtering there. But I think very few of them go to SPCA to monitor the slaughter. They simply slaughter generally. Bylaws are not being enforced, but maybe again the bylaws are not accommodative to their culture too. And then something that I think the team that deals with culture must also look at, that new cities, you know, that we are building must accommodate all this diversity of the society. Otherwise, it's a big problem. Some of them, in fact, they can't slaughter outside because they are scared that their goats are going to cause problems. They slaughter inside their house. If their goat is infected by whatever disease, then we have a bigger problem of the society. Because the slaughter is the family, that's why there's a lot of money in selling all these chickens and cows. And their funeral every week, and there's slaughter, you know. The people are not taking care of hygiene, nothing greater thing they're taking care of. And the local authorities must be working on that. That's all. Then I find this time, that's all.
traditional leaders must work out to us. In fact, it seems that the university, I was reading the media paper yesterday, that there's one university, somebody, not West University, who are promoting the, Joanne, I think we saw it sometime, that are promoting the indigenous knowledge system. I see yesterday all the Nyangas and the old people are practicing many things. We're celebrating what they call African indigenous medicine general yesterday, University of Northwest, but it's got other place in Portugal also, where I think general people are doing this thing, they must promote this. Nyangas, I'm Fabia Lima. Remember, Kaula always moved from Kaula Lina and Salami Yangayat. Yangayat was there. Says the dear Kulumu, Yangayat from Kaula Lina. Let us move on, colleagues. 182. The yellow one is what you inserted as amendment. Yes, sir.
Just a question with regard to clause L on 181. Well, more L than M. L is the one that worries me a little bit because we've specified in section 15 of the Act what the functions of the traditional leader are. And I'm not sure what executive authority or administrative authority that would be in terms of that they are allocating land. We know that there are existing practices where traditional leaders allocate land in terms of a permission to occupy letter. But the question is about the legality of that process and what gives them the authority to do so. Now, given that this act effectively takes away the authority to, unless it's specifically delegated to them in terms of legislation, I have a concern about that. I'm just worried that this implies an authority that they may not have. And I said completely that we deleted it, but the practice is currently that they are currently doing this. So on the one hand, yes, the municipality will want to know about the fact that the land has been allocated. But on the other hand, we don't want to encourage a practice that may or may not be legal.
It's not that there's the tension between local authority and traditional leaders around land allocation. That traditional leaders are allocating lands, but there's no law that authorizes them to do so. But they've been doing that every corner. And then what do we do, Esther?
Normally, where such land is allocated, what normally happens from where I come from, there's an argument with the municipality that this is where.
But what, where do you come from?
I'm sorry. They will then agree that this is an area where people can occupy.
Okay.
And these are the sites of the land and all of that. When they get demarcated, then the traditional leader has the need of who has been allocated what. So in some people, then they think traditional leaders allocate land, whereas there's an argument or an understanding prior to that. We're not talking here about land invasion. We're talking about an organized So that is how it happens. There are new villages that are coming up. there's an argument that this would be a residential area, there would be graves and all those kinds of things. So that the proper engagement and separation of responsibilities.
But that one then is a delegated function by government structure at the local level, because they don't have the original power to allocate it. They expect these authorities, council, to say to them, this land is set aside for occupation, and then you can then allocate sites on your behalf. That's what they're doing.
But yes, no, not necessarily land invasion, okay. Will be where people just identify and often feel just go and
I'm just saying that they cancel meet and say cheapest choice. But then now this area is set aside for fight.
Yes.
And then do that on our behalf. They do that. Or they just do it themselves without council having agreed and identify the issue there.
To the best of my knowledge, Chairperson, there's an engagement between the traditional leader,
the
ward councillor, including the mayor.
Let's take the Maswan.
Let's note, it's really something that we need to look at, because legislation was not allowed. And this trial of informal amendment, or whatever, can lead to complications later on. Other countries have to think through that we look at after the action. And sense that the notion of U.S. For now, it's a different kind. The issue is there that there's complication. And sometimes what people do, councillors do, in the name of peace, the councillors allow transgender leaders to do it. And it's going to run into all sorts of problems. Especially because basic laws with respect to some criminals, it gets undermined quite seriously. And things that we have very little to do with our society later on, they are not very much.
Chair, I'm happy if we delete L. I do think that as a suggestion that we should have a joint meeting with land reform to look at the role of traditional leaders in allocation of land, particularly in communal areas. And I just want to give an example where there isn't an informal agreement. You know, if you go to Buffalo City Metro, on the road from King Williamstown out to Dimbaza, the local chief has allocated land to people. I don't know on what basis. It might be a bottle of whiskey, it might be 10 cows, I don't know, I have no idea. And you go there and there's three houses along the road where there are no services. But now, once the house is there, then the people come to the municipality and say, I need to have services put in. And it's not part of the spatial development plan. It's not part of where the municipality is. It's just happened because the traditional leader said, yes, build a house there. You know? So there's the informal arrangement, but equally there's kind of rogue elements that are doing their own thing, and I'm happy that we leave that up. Please, Chair, if we could have that joint meeting to discuss that in the near future.
One of you, sir.
Yes, Chair, I really support the issue of living in this area. I know, Chair, mostly in the real world, there is a development that is taking place in the area. You know, all those developments, at the end of the day, it's a cost to and the municipality comes after this development. So I think this sentence is what it meant to me. My understanding was that once there are people
in that particular area, then they must inform the municipality so that the development can take place there. They will need electricity, they will need food, especially don't then collect in terms of water, such services. Because if they don't provide, they will really tamper with the system that is there. That's where you find the electrical theft, and all that. If it's not being also put on board.
Did you?
That's my problem. This issue of stroma, it's really taking to the attention of the committee that these functions of stroma are removed currently today to the meeting that started at 9 o'clock. Some of the functions to strengthen planning are going to Department of Planning and Monitoring. And then a bigger chunk is coming to Quarta for understandable reasons. Because the challenge, the tension that is there between the municipality and traditional cultures, you know, it's as a result of these things done by department elsewhere. And then we are responsible for municipalities and traditional leaders and so on. So there is that process as we speak. Because traditional leaders have rejected Struma. There have been several attempts where we have met with them and so on. And then we have indicated that at least their participation in the country. That's where the decision of allocation, you know, planning of utilization of land and so on. Despite that, they rejected it. So as we keep the M, we should also bear in mind that this process, I think, even a gazette of moving those functions from the environment to this department, as we speak. But what Honorable Man is proposing, I think, is important, so that there should not be a buffer with regard to this matter, but on a daily basis. These things are happening. I know of instances that have been reported in the past where a traditional leader in a particular area, you know, allocated a piece of land and another person came with a bigger car. And they allocated the same size. And the first person that put the thing found that there's a bigger fence. And when he went there, so it was brought my attention. And then I went to the provincial house to say there is this matter that they tried to solve it. And so on. So.
Well, let's move to 182. L is removed.
Is that that is an opportunity to just make this money? The problem is that these responsibilities are taken from the municipality. And centralized with the understanding that at some point Parliament National government will assist for the further process. But because of lack of cooperation between traditional leaders and municipalities at the local level, the situation would not be any easier. It got more complicated. Now, what you have now is a situation where this responsibility. Now, I don't understand the logic myself, because it's been over many years. I don't understand the logic of how can development, how can COPTA facilitate development in the village of Ngolobi, in the back of beyond, in Mwazumbata, most companies, I mean, I'm not saying the content all about the possibilities and the problems there, and what's happening there, and so on. Is one of these mishaps, Chairperson has happened over the years. I mean, from 10, we're debating this issue 10 years after 1994, and there was no progress at all. In other words, Parliament has been discussing the issue for 10 years when we're debating. It's now 23 years since 1994. 23 years. And this matter is not sorted out. And it's a disaster. Because I mean, these issues of local development really belong to municipalities by right. Now we have a problem again where the centralization has been asserted. But how does the quarter pushing or whatever brings the departments going to affect the process at the local level? Nobody knows. It's something that I think we need to pursue. Have a separate discussion. Okay, just, yeah. There was another thing.
Okay.
Because it leads up to problems. These problems that in part are fueled and complicated by this lack of clarity on how this works out.
Okay, colleagues, I think it's a bigger issue that we must work on it continuously. The 23 years trying to appease the traditional leaders, it seems they demand more than their appeasement. Then it's a big issue to try to appease them. But they say, no, we need more power to advocate them. Let us move on, colleagues, and 182, 9, councillors and municipal councillors and participating traditional leaders, I think that's a point. Can we move to A? Procedural matters there. B, to cooperate. Cooperating about working relationship. Can we move to 10? 10A, in the event of any breach or non-compliance. B, any alleged breach. C, the finding of any investigation, of debit or investigation in detail. Page 183, let's go to D, notwithstanding the provision. When we are not sure about issues also. Can assist us to pick up some points, if you mustn't hesitate to do so. Let's move to 12 or November.
Sorry, Chair.
Okay.
There's a reference to PKLA. And I know what it is, and you know what it is, but I think it needs to be expanded out open instead of bottom of 183.
I didn't see that. TKLA?
Yeah, page 1.
174. There will be a definition in the legislation on for this purpose.
But in full, what is it?
Position request of the Leadership Act.
Yeah. It's a very good one. Mr. William Boss? We are at page 184. We have moved from now, we are at the 13A.
abbreviation
TKLA, Traditional and Co-Ensemble Leadership Act. You stand a chance also to be in the one of the poison. Can we move to 13G? Out of pocket expenses must be authorized by the municipal prior to the meeting or event of the three out of pocket expenses do not include any salary allowance. That explanation there. Move to D to ensure uniformity across provinces. The minister may have a conversation with the premier and by not taking a direct make regulation for an out of pocket expense. We have looked at it also. Then there's two there. Sub 2, Schedule 3 of local government is hereby repealed by the Act, is not accepted by President. 3, Traditional Choir and Leadership, we have deleted that one. 2018, the intention that by next year, if possible, we must pass it. First half of next year.
Jeff, can I just get clarity with regard to 13, pretty much in its entirety. So the only thing that these participating leaders will get is out-of-pocket expenses. They won't get a stipend, they won't get a salary, they won't get anything like that. They will just get out-of-pocket expenditure. Is that correct? Because they're reimbursed as traditional leaders. Okay.
That is Black Authority Act.
Black Administration Act, the one for number 38 of 1927.
1927. Oh, 1927.
Yeah.
Too far. Amazon. Six, that is your year of
death. Yeah. Yeah. But that's one of the we what has changed and what is the totality of the situation as we speak. Not only people suffering, they're talking about the party shocking. But that's the something like that is really highly appreciated.
Okay. One of my son is just a question note. So just a very good summary of the whole thing. To assist for communication purposes, and I think we can do that. It's two pages here. And just avoid legalistic wording. We are not interested now in that. We have exhausted us on clause by clause. We have taken our time about March and May. You are just killing us.
We can be changed to shall.
Charlie, really, it's just a very issue. Colleagues, as far as we know, all of us, we have done our level best. We have concluded clause by clause. As we agreed that then the administration, the department one, the state law advisor, the parliamentary one, they will work it out. Put it in a format that is acceptable to all of us. And they will have one meeting for just to look at it. Once they're through on that, in 2 weeks' time, I think they'll be through. And then when we get back again to Parliament after our constituency work, we'll have a very short meeting again to look at everything. And we approve it in terms of the old amendment that are put there, because we don't have them now all. We can't, so, but many of them have been effected already. And then we'll then have other issues that we'll debate and discuss for future discussion with other committees, because the committee that is dealing with the with this court of Matole, what we call this court of Matole, traditional court bill, all that. They will have to, they will interact with us and other people. And I think in terms of the traditional employee and friend leadership bill, 2015, now in 2018, next year, in 2015, we have exhausted it in terms of clause by clause. The work now is with the team to rework our amendment that we put in the commission that we proposed. And then they will indicate to us when they're through in 2 weeks' time. Niam was only coming back for the 7th of October, first week of October. I think he'll be enough time. First meeting of the committee, we look at it. Then we sign it off. Then we go to Parliament in October, debate it in Parliament. Mayhem, we won't debate it now. I think it's tired already. He's going to say that endorse, declaration, endorse, and remove. I very prefer to defeat this thing when you are not able to reserve your right. The right is reserved. We take the point, and then we work it out, Professor. The point that you raised also that you must put them in. And I think the team will raise that and the issue that the medal also have indicated. You look at this 1927 one. How does it work? As you are saying that in that act, in fact, it's an era at DG that we are attacked by public participation people. That in fact we are dealing with those issues and what an issue there in 1951. Then likewise, and then 1927, then the issue that in fact we are giving Amakosi more power to allocate land when in terms of the law, we are not giving that power and authority. It's an issue that we must work it out. And let's come back then and accept then the whole issue of parliament. But we are happy with this one. Honorable Mayhem, I think we are happy not to be standing up objection on some clauses. We are not opposed to the bill as a whole. I'm hitting areas where we are not sure about it.
Chairman, is it my right
to take it to your caucus?
Yeah.
Do you think that the caucus will look at this?
Yes.
Thank you very much, colleagues, for participating. There are many other laws that are still coming for us. And then we must just prepare ourselves. Thank you for this. And I'm not sure the staff, did you prepare lunch for members?
Yes,
sir. When lunch is around, the members please, to avoid again mayhem, accusing us of wasting of resources. I know that you don't eat food of the masses. Colleagues, something is coming. Let us relax. Okay. I never see you sometimes. Every time you start to eat, you just disappear. I was very worried about that.
They're
both full. Madam is very progressive. Is a Mason is what we describe as positive liberal approach. Positive liberals, they are always very positive. They acknowledge reality. They don't say everything is not there, even if there's food, there's no food. That MSP, I think, is very happy now. In Duna, thank you very much. There's something to eat, really. Don't leave DG before eating.
Okay.
You are leaving now. You're going home?
No.